Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
What a lovely thing to say. I'm very proud to be able to be here too. I'm very proud to be able to say I was a nurse. Still am a nurse. I don't think it ever quite leaves you. And good morning to everybody. I gather that people are looking this online or might be looking at it later. So I sort of feel I should wave to the people out there who aren't actually in the room. But it really is a pleasure to be here, and I'm often invited to speak to events. I never quite know what I'm coming into. It can be a room with 500 or 600 people, or it can be a more intimate setting like this. But it's always great to have a chance to talk about where I see nursing, and this is in particular about quality and accountability, which is so important for us all. Just over a week ago, I was at the Mary Seacole Awards, just one way of recognising nurses, midwives and health visitors who work on schemes that help people from black or ethnic minority backgrounds improve their health. And it's always a pleasure to meet inspiring and ambitious nurses and hear about their projects and how they improve patient care, improve safety, and improve patients' experiences of care. I think we don't often put enough emphasis on that. And in particular, in circumstances where patients aren't getting the care suitable for their needs, culture, or maybe for their background. And of course, as on all these occasions, I learn a little bit. I enjoyed reading and hearing more about Mary Seacole herself, whose story really never gets old, even though it happened 150 years ago. My goodness, her determination to do the best for wounded soldiers during the Crimean War, showed the best compassion, commitment, and a burning desire to keep pushing on towards better and better care, and very much against the odds, knocked down on almost every occasion. And that hasn't gone away, and it's what I see from nurses every day of the week, and it's whether it's in somebody's home or by a bedside, or whether it's the ward manager or the community team leader making sure patients are getting the care that they need. It might be matrons in hospitals, communities, leading by example by constantly pushing to raise standards. There's no doubt in my mind that nurses are what make care work. And of course, following in the footsteps of Mary Seacole, Florence Nightingale, and there were many others. Every other icon of nursing, and maybe some of you in this room have your own icons, maybe they're personal icons. I know I do. Each part of the NHS always needs to be looking at how we can get better. And it shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us. It doesn't, maybe it does to others sometimes, that nurses are always actually at the front of that effort. The Royal Orthopaedic Hospital in Birmingham, the nurses there have combined new training, new equipment and aseptic techniques to reduce catheter-acquired urinary tract infections to zero. Wonderful figure, zero, don't you think? Even as the number of patients with catheters has risen. And of course, achievements like that have a profound effect on people well beyond the actual infection itself. And we all want to see best practice spread across every part of the NHS, with nurses and nursing showing what can be achieved. In 2009, Chris Beasley, the Chief Nursing Officer, launched the 8 high impact actions that would have a big impact on quality of care and patient safety. They were decided by nurses and midwives and cover everything from preventing falls, avoiding pressure ulcers, to promoting normal births. On the website for the High Impact Actions is a nifty tool that allows you to work out roughly how much money different NHS organisations spend on those avoidable costs. Of course, those financial costs matter, but so indeed do the human costs, and we maybe don't give enough account of that. To help gauge progress and see where we need to improve, there's lots of ways to measure patient outcomes and the quality of their care. National patients and staff surveys can paint a broad picture, but the real gold, the gems, are in localised data. Complaints, patient stories, ratings from patients that are immediately available not weeks or months or years down the line, but now. And Sheffield Teaching Hospitals FT has just been working with the Picker Institute to do just that. They've got a system of real-time monitoring, so if a patient has a gripe or a pat on the back or a concern or an issue that can be addressed, it can be so quickly. Similarly, positive feedback can go back quickly. They often involve patients in actually designing the surveys themselves. And not only has that changed day-to-day care to bring it in line with what patients want, but also the trust is now asking patients what they'd like to see further in the future. Based on that feedback, parts of the hospital are being redesigned now to create a more homely atmosphere for patients. Measures like these allow the local NHS to see a constantly changing picture of care, to see what the problems and opportunities are, and then work out the best way to deal with them, hopefully nipping them in the bud before they become a big issue, or on a positive note, spreading them around so that that good quality care and practice and patient satisfaction can be spread. Of course, for those lessons to be put to good use, and indeed for any change to happen successfully, staff across all areas of the NHS need to work together to make it happen. We are always greater than the sum total of our individual parts. In Salford, the NHS there has completely remodeled unscheduled care services, with nurses leading on alcohol A&E rapid response. Hospitals, GP surgeries and community nurses have worked together to make sure patients know where to get the care that is best for them. It's meant over a 4% fall in A&E attendances, less duplication of care and fewer patients being passed around departments, a bit like we sometimes do on the phone when we phone a call centre. That shows how the best care benefits both patients and staff. Of course, the best way of improving standards of care is to root out the poor bits and to recognise the good bits. But that comes with a very big and very real taboo. Choosing to speak up about care can be the most difficult and the most intimidating experience in anybody's career. And in order to make that easier and less daunting for nurses to raise concerns, we need to foster a culture of openness throughout the NHS from root to branch. Very easy to say, I know, and I wouldn't underestimate the difficulty of doing that. But we need to get to a position where whistleblowing isn't seen as undermining colleagues, but as a vital part of a mature, sophisticated healthcare system that supports staff but is also accountable to patients and to the public. We're consulting at the moment on whether there should be a formal duty of candour to require NHS providers to be open with patients when things go wrong. Personally, I think it's an essential step towards giving patients absolute peace of mind, not to mention that could be a layer of support for nurses who stand up for good care. At the same time, we want to protect from victimisation those staff who speak out about genuine concerns over bad practice. And we've issued guidance to the NHS on how to support whistleblowers and take action on their concerns. And to underline its importance, the NHS Constitution will make very clear the rights and duties of NHS staff and their employers when it comes to lifting the lid on poor performance. That is only a start. It takes a long time, I think, to turn around the culture. To encourage a culture that is open and welcome to whistleblowers, the NHS needs to show strong, visible and dynamic leadership. It is absolutely critical to planning and delivering safe services for patients. And earlier this year, we announced a new NHS leadership framework endorsed by the RCN to make sure all staff are given the tools to improve their leadership skills. Next year, there will be a new leadership academy to provide a national focus on leadership and provide training and development for everyone with a leadership role in the NHS. Absolutely critical. And we probably don't spend enough time talking about it and developing good leaders within our workforce. In reality, that means developments like they've seen in Cambridge, where staff had the skills and confidence to dramatically improve diabetes care. They invested in community care to improve glucose control and to help self-management. As a result, patient admissions plummeted by almost 40% immediately. I mean, that is a staggering figure. And that's what clinical leadership means, of course, in practice. Individuals taking the initiative, experimenting with new ideas, and getting the support they need from the chains of command above them. And although leadership is vital at all levels of nursing, I also want to see strong leadership continue at the very highest level. There will be two new senior leadership posts, one on the NHS Commissioning Board and the other in the Department of Health. They'll have the year of ministers, that's me. They will have the year of ministers because they will be in the two critical placed in the two critical organisations for how we manage the NHS in the future. That focus on improving experiences and safety of patients, as well as the health of the general public. And they will make sure that nursing and nurses and leadership reaches the very top. There has recently been, and there always is, talk about extending regulation for one group or another, and I know that you made reference to some of this in what you spoke about. But let's be absolutely clear about one thing, that regulation is no substitute for good leadership on wards and in care homes. Bristol and Miss Staffordshire taught us that in the most tragic way. Employers must always take responsibility and be accountable for the staff they employ and the skills that they have. And those who delegate must also always be responsible for the delegation that they make. Regulation can only react after something bad has happened to prevent further harm. It is most definitely no panacea. And actually, the one thing that's missing when everybody talks about regulation is an adjective beforehand, and that is effective regulation. We have lots of regulations in this country about all sorts of things, and not all of it is effective in any way at all. Everyday nurses in the NHS and in care homes stop harm happening at all just by virtue of their professionalism and compassion. Good care, high quality care, is about training, education, high standards, high quality, and most of all, that visible leadership. And I know that the NMC is working very hard, as you heard, to update its guidance so that nursing staff understand about delegation and how to delegate safely. And that's a very positive step. It will complement the changes that we're bringing in to help encourage high quality care. Nurses, professional groups, charities, volunteers, governments, the best changes and the best care can only come if we all work together. Not when we work as individual groups or with our own individual agendas. The only way to create a system that is best for staff, for patients and for everyone is that working together. It's a terrible cliche these days. How many times do you hear partnership working, all sorts of words that are spill out of our mouths, you see on PowerPoints all around the country, probably up there now as I'm talking. But actually, you have to make it work. We have to make it work. I've mentioned some of the examples of effective care that are fueled by collaboration and driven by nurses. And I know that there are countless more that I didn't have time to bring up and actually that we don't even know about. People getting on very quietly in their own way, driving up standards and improving quality and safety. But they do remind us of the dedication and the passion that nurses have. And that professional pride is nothing new. And just look at back 150 years at Mary Seacole and others like her. I still feel it from when I was a nurse because I really don't think, as I said at the very beginning, that nursing ever leaves you. I still want to see nurses and nursing doing the best for patients, for families, and of course for nurses themselves. So I have to finish by thanking you all for all that you are doing, all that you have done, and all that you will continue to do in the future, because I know that high quality care is safe in your hands. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from PolicyReview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.